made sense for some people to experiment, to just, in a way, try and find out, you know, what are the alternatives.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
David Cayley.
How would I introduce myself? By saying that I'm a writer, a broadcaster, that I've worked for CBC Radio for most of my adult life. Going back to 1971, I guess, was my first radio program. I've been at it ever since, and I'm a grandfather.
You were a pioneer in the field of unschooling. How was it, and what was that journey that you took when you first started unschooling? What even inspired you to do it?
You probably should be talking to my wife, Yuta, but I mean, because somebody obviously has to have the nerve and the willingness to establish a household in which it can happen. And that, all credit to her in that respect. But I guess the story would be that, I had read Illich. I had been in CUSO, in the Canadian University Service Overseas in 68, so I first read Illich in connection with international development. But I had read Deschooling Society, but we didn't have a plan exactly. But we sent our oldest child, or my oldest child with Yuta, I have one older daughter, to a kindergarten. I think it might even have been junior kindergarten. But anyway, we were new in this neighborhood. We had moved back to Toronto recently, and we thought she should have a look at it. And she basically came home and told us what, in a sense, we already knew, which was that she found it socially very, very cliquish. I'm putting words in a, you know, five-year-old's mouth, but that was what she said in effect. And second, that she didn't like being interrupted all the time, that whenever she began something, she was immediately set to doing something else. So we said, you know, in effect, that she could be excused from school. She didn't have to go. And really, from then on, didn't seem to come up again. Neither of our two sons, who were younger than Kate, ever expressed any interest in until they were much older. But I never regarded us as doing anything called homeschooling. It just didn't make any real sense to me. I think it's tough enough having parents without them being pedagogues as well. So it was more establishing a context or a place where they could be and where interesting things potentially could happen. I read to them a great deal because I liked doing that. But there was never any real intention to administer education. Maybe a small effort to allow them to keep up with sort of, you know, arithmetic and basic mathematics, just in case they wanted to go to school. And indeed, both boys did go to school, Luke beginning in the 8th grade and Daniel beginning in the 9th. Kate never did. She went straight to university. That was pretty interesting, actually, because I had the impression when she applied to universities that they had no idea what to do with an undocumented person. She just sent in a dossier to the University of Toronto, to Trent, and the University of King's College in Halifax. It was an interesting dossier of letters and also an essay she had written on a poem of Shelley's poem on the death of Keats, which was a favorite of hers. It was a long and, I thought, pretty learned essay. But I don't think they had any idea what to do with her. King's finally reacted, I think, because they knew who I was, and they were great to her. So maybe that's changed now, or maybe not that many kids actually apply straight to universities without any high school. At this time, which is the early 90s, I mean, we already knew about people in the States, famous, you know, cases, the boys who went to Harvard. But we had the impression, at least in the early 90s, that the Canadian universities just didn't have any idea about this. Yuta, my wife, Yuta Mason, organized an afternoon on Thursdays at the local community center where people could come and get together. And there was a you know, it was a goodly group. And it was just around that same time, this is the early 80s, when the Ministry of Education changed its tack, because they had prosecuted a family in the Kingston area. So a new person came in at the Ministry of Education. They really changed their tack and became much more accepting. We were able to have quite a workable relationship with two specialists from the Toronto Board who would visit us from time to time. Yuta wrote to them regularly, wonderful little essays about what we were doing, so we were always, in a way, a step ahead of them. It wasn't difficult.
How about with just neighbors and family, and were people not curious?
There were various levels of conversation. One of the interesting ones was the children, I always thought, because we lived on a downtown street in Toronto, and there were a lot of children on the street, and they knew a lot of other children, so opinion was sharply divided amongst the children about this. Some of them said, "You're so lucky," and the others would give little lectures about how they were going nowhere in life without schooling. So, you know, there was that level. I think it was probably difficult for my parents. My father was a schoolmaster. I grew up in the milieu of boys' private schools. But I think, you know, they have eyes and ears, too, and I think, you know, they could see that these were bright and well-informed children. I guess the biggest anxiety I would encounter all the time would talk to me about socialization. Obviously, it was always the occasion for me to launch a little lecture on the fact that human beings are social animals, and that really this is not, no process is required for socialization. Socialization simply occurs as long as there's a society.
Okay.
I would say that the greatest thing about it, and here I would single out my daughter Kate, because just to preface this, both of the boys at a certain age, the sort of verge of adolescence, said, you know, we're not really any good at this, right? We don't exactly have our own scholarly agendas. You know, we want to be part of the big show, like we're going to school now. And neither of them were particularly diligent students. Both got through, and both are graduating from university this year, but that wasn't why they went. They were clear why they were going. I think it mattered to them a good deal. They were there of their own volition. But they made it clear that they were not independent scholars. Kate, on the other hand, never seemed to have an idle moment. Not beginning early at all, but after age 9, 10, was a very adventurous reader. And I watched her get an education on her own. She has a little theater company now, and she's, theater was her passion from the beginning, but how she conducted her education. So she would begin, she was fascinated with Ellen Terry, who was a great 19th century actress. And you just follow the thread from Ellen Terry leads you to the Pre-Raphaelites, or she leads you to here, and pretty soon she's reading Shaw's prefaces, and I don't know what. By the time she was 13 or 14, again approximately, I could recognize her as a peer, as someone who simply knew things about things that I was interested in, that I would ask her about, that she would tell me about. She became what I would call an educated person. I think that for me means a certain spirit, but also a certain awareness of where the boundaries of your knowledge are at a given moment, knowing as much what you don't know as what you do, a certain disposition, which was very remarkable and admirable in her. And I had been a sort of prize-winning student, sort of an awkward boy who always won the Latin prize. So it was very hard for me to separate my avidity for knowledge from my avidity for prizes and pats on the head. And it was quite a deep reassurance to me to see this intellectually vibrant person, you know, I mean, I could have read that John Stuart Mill did the same thing in his father's library, or, you know, there are many, many historical cases of people who became what they are without anybody schooling them. But still, it was a deep kind of reassurance for me, and instilled a feeling of hope. The spirit of experimentation, and again, I would give my wife a lot of credit for that. It's also related to the times we live in, right? To the feeling that if we go back to Illich wasn't just saying something about the school as such, right? In fact, I don't think he was that interested in the school as an institution for a limited, you know, the people would gather in groups for limited purposes to learn things. It wasn't anything he wanted to make a big issue about. He was talking about the emergence of this sort of super process, right? This feeling that there's going to be a process for everything, that the the form of the thing is going to so totally eclipse the content as to render the contents really insignificant. And I accepted that, right? I accepted his argument that contemporary institutions were really passing over a threshold. It's perhaps not as clear to people in the case of education. I mean, I think the clearest instance is medicine, where the province of Ontario is now spending 42%, I believe, currently, of its budget on health care, so-called. And every single person you talk to, nearly, will explain to you that this is not adequate, not enough of this. If you extrapolate, you get only to the year 2030, when you have the entire public budget consumed by the healthcare system, and presumably people will still feel that they can't get new hips quickly enough. So it's in that context that it seemed to me it made sense for some people to experiment, to just, in a way, try and find out, you know, what are the alternatives? What can one do on one's own without making some big claim for it, or without trying to engage the system on its own terms, i.e. we're supplying superior education or nothing like that. To just step outside in a certain way and just see what's possible.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
I think having babies not in hospitals was a big part of that too. Seeing that the varieties of things that could happen when you are outside sort of system protocols, so to say. Things that happen there because it's set up for them. They can't happen any other way. It's a terrible thing to me that some sort of institutionalized form of scholarship has become the universal road to adult opportunity. So the one who's made for a carpenter or made for a musician or made for anything else, in a certain way, it's amazing how difficult it is for people to find their place.
Would you have done anything differently in your approach as a family to homeschooling and unschooling? Sorry.
God, what a question. Would I have done anything differently? I don't even know how to answer it. One could always do better. I might have not had a television set. On the other hand, I'm not even confident about that when I say it, because the world is what it, my eldest daughter, the daughter of my first marriage, it says that, it only increased the attraction of television, that she didn't have a television when she was growing up. So, people have to swim in the sea. So, no, I just don't think of my life that way.
What are the children up to these days?
Well, both my sons just are finishing university. They should finish this year. And Kate has a theater, has a theater company called Stranger Theater, and she writes and directs plays. I think the great vice that is probably developing in this milieu is giving children too much attention, too much centrality, too much power, and so that there can be two very different ways of doing this. One is to free the child from the impositions of the system, but the other is then to begin to romanticize and to really run the world around children. And I don't think that's any better. I think that we're dealing on a big societal level with a collapse of authority, indeed a collapse of all degree and hierarchy, seemingly. So it's quite possible to meet young people who seem to have no idea of differences in degree, whether they relate to age or achievement, or simply the dignity of those who have accumulated a certain number of years. So I think that's probably something people should watch out for. I'll tell you one story. This is again about my daughter Kate, who, as an adult, began to teach homeschoolers. And she there was a case where a young pupil of hers was contemplating going to the High School of the Arts. And Kate said to me, she said, that would be absolutely the worst thing for this young woman, because her life was a performance already, that she had, in a way, she'd been on a stage all along, right? I think homeschooling, de-schooling, unschooling, could be a chance to live in the world, to see the world. But if the world has, to an extent, disappeared or retreated behind closed doors, then it can also be an intensification of what's already going on in the school, which is to, in a way, turn life around and make the child, its apex rather than its mere inception. Not exactly saying spare the rod and spoil the child, but I'm, I'm talking about a certain kind of discipline, a certain sense of different, and a certain sense that it might be liberating for children not to feel they're all that important. Parents have other concerns that they can't know of and can go into. But if their sense that their parents' overwhelming concern is them, that's a strange kind of attitude, right? You can grow from that into a world in which you're the customer, you're the client, you're the important one. Everything is about you and your gratification. We had this gathering every Thursday. That was pretty important because, you know, it led to friendships and so on, and it led to play, you know, it led to play friends too, right? So we would meet with those people at other times. So that was important, but that was about it. We weren't very keen to probably to get more involved in being a movement, or maybe we a bit avoided that sense of a movement. Or another important resource was John Holt's Growing Without Schooling. I think what John Holt did was very good, and that was important to us. And I think we were pretty much on the sort of anarchic edge compared to people who were administering home education.
I was just wondering if you had mentors for the kids, any natural mentoring?
You know, it depends a little bit on the child, right, on how they respond to what's available, what's around them. So Kate had a pretty important relationship with Ivan Illich, and she also she found her teachers, you know, by volunteering just to help out with plays and so on. So she was able to find the people she wanted and needed in the theater world pretty early on.
Were the wild flowers blooming in the forest? The wild flower blooms amongst the weeds. I've seen violets and I've seen roses. Wildflower, you're beautiful to me. Up atop of the highest snow-capped mountain, or deep within the valleys down below, the wildflower won't be found in the garden where all the other flowers grow from the seeds which have been sown by the ones who never see the wildflower. Would you try to pluck her and hold her in your hand? The wildflower fades, but then she blooms again. Though through the years the forces have conspired, tear her from the earth, which is her home, her beauty rages like a deathless fire. And when all the rest have gone, she will greet the new day sun that smiles down upon the wildflower. Would you try to pluck her and hold her in your hand? Wildflower fades, but then she blooms again. Where are the wildflowers blooming in the forest? And the wildflower blooms amongst the weeds. I've seen violets and I've seen roses. But wildflower, you're beautiful to me. Wildflower, you're beautiful to me. Wildflower, you're beautiful to me.
Shireen Earth and Pam Penny.
Social sciences, most universities are seeking out homeschool kids. But if you want to do something outside the social science realm, chemistry, engineering, get a BSc, maybe even go on to medicine, whatever the case may be, you're going to have a heck of a time getting accepted at the university level. I sat on the Board of Education for 15 years before I homeschooled and was well aware of what the perspective on homeschool was. It has changed. I mean, I've been home, my daughter's 12, and I always say I've been homeschooling for 12 years. She's never been in the system. We're looking at possibly her going to high school for probably grades 11 and 12. And I have to tell you, it's more for the high school experience. It's not for the academics. We'll cover that fine at home.
You're going to get the high school experience in university. It's still the same.
You see, now I have to disagree
high school.
With that.
No,
going to McMaster, I'm a graduate of McMaster. I have my master's degree from Mac. One of my master's is from Mac, one is from Western. But that high school experience, being a part of the school newspaper.
The band, yeah.
Doing the band. That's the high school experience. The university level, yeah, how many bands are there? They're tilting their elbows and experimentation. That's not the experience that I am talking about. What I'm talking about is to give her an opportunity to interact with kids who have been in a traditional school setting for the 13 years that they've been in school, so that she can appreciate her differences, but also have that prom. I can't do the prom.
I didn't either.
I mean, we do a grade 8 graduation. I did all of that.
Because my experience in high school was not academic at all. It was fun, and skipping classes.
Most people say that.
And sleeping in, and where's my spare, and can I drop that class?
And at 11 and 12, they're going to come out with their full accreditation.
Yeah,
and getting in at the university level is a lot easier. Having known homeschoolers from both sides who have gone to the universities, and I've just homeschooled my child right through, even OACs, and now I want them to go into university. It's been a difficult process for them to move forward. Those who have come out of high school, even with 1 or 2 years, and have substantiated their credits.
Like grade 11 at least.
Grade 11.
Yeah. That's when they look at it.
Well, actually, Helen's daughter, Nicole, she's been homeschooling for 12 years. Nicole's 18. Nicole went to Delta this year so she can get her grade 12 credits.
So she just went in at grade 12?
She was finished, actually. She was already 18.
But they just put her in at grade 12.
But the program that she wanted to fulfill, to be accepted at, there was a lot of stone walls as soon as they found out she was a homeschooler.
So even though she graduated at home, they just put her in grade 12 so she could graduate out of high school.
Correct. So she could acquire those grade 12 credits that were acceptable. Now, she had to write 2 exams to make sure that she was up to par, and she had no problem with either of them particularly. And she's finding, and I have to tell you, she is finding the courses to be a bird walk. American universities have always been very well aware of homeschoolers and have actually sought them out. Canadian universities have been reticent to do so. But we have broken a lot of ground. There are universities now that actually have set up acceptance programs for homeschoolers. Brock particularly, Laurier definitely, Western has. McMaster is accepting them, but only in social sciences.
But some that they didn't know were homeschoolers, they accepted.
Yes. Guelph also has. And most of the community colleges just, And so you can go to a community college for 1 or 2 years and then perhaps seek out a university degree.
Roll call! Come along now, you'll be late for parade! Rip, rip! Rip, car!
You are listening to Radio Facebook.
Discipline!
On CFMU.
Hello, my name is Madeline Kay. I'm going to read Days with Frog and Toad by Arnold Lebel. The chapter is Alone. Toad went to Frog's house. He found a note on the door. The note said, "Dear Toad, I am not at home. I went out. I want to be alone, Frog."
"Alone," said Toad. "Frog has me for a friend. Why does he want to be alone?"
Toad looked through the windows. He looked in the garden. He did not see Frog. Toad went to the woods. Frog was not there. He went to the meadow. Frog was not there. Toad went down to the river. There was Frog. He was sitting on an island by himself.
"Poor Frog," said Toad. "He must be very sad. I will cheer him up." Toad ran home. He made sandwiches. He made a pitcher of iced tea. He put everything in a bath. Toad hurried back to the river. "Frog," he shouted. "It's me. It's your best friend, Toad. frog was too far away to hear. Toad took off his jacket. He waved it like a flag. Frog was too far away to see. Toad shouted and waved, but it was no use. Frog sat on the island. He didn't see or hear Toad. A turtle swam by. Toad climbed on the turtle's back. "Turtle," said Toad, "carry me to the island. Frog is there. He wants to be alone." "If Frog wants to be alone," said the turtle, "why don't you leave him alone?" "Maybe you are right," said Toad. "Maybe Frog does not want to see me. Maybe he does not want me to be his friend anymore." "Yes, maybe," said the turtle, as he swam to the island. "Frog!" cried Toad. "I am sorry for all the dumb things I do. I am sorry for all the silly things I say. Please be my friend again." Toad slipped off the turtle with a splash. He fell in the river. Frog pulled Toad up onto the island. Toad looked in the basket. The sandwiches were wet. The pitcher of iced tea was empty. "Our lunch is spoiled," said Toad. "I made it for you, Frog, so that you would be happy." But Toad," said Frog, "I am happy. I am very happy. This morning when I woke up, I felt good because the sun was shining. I felt good because I was a frog. And I felt good because I have you for a friend. I wanted to be alone. I wanted to think about how fine everything is." "Oh," said Toad, "I guess that is a very good reason for wanting to be alone." "Now," said Frog, "I will be glad not to be alone. Let's eat lunch." Frog and Toad stayed on the island all afternoon. They ate wet sandwiches without iced tea. They were two close friends sitting alone together.
You can't be alone together.
Boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy? Boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy? Giddy and foolish all day long. Boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy? A horse and a flea and three blind mice sat on a curbstone shooting dice. The horse, he slipped and fell on the flea. "Whoops," said the flea, "there's a horse on me." Boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy? Boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy? Giddy and foolish all day long. Boom, boom, ain't it great to be.
Why did you join the Crazy Show?
I have the idea. We had this great theme song because it's Crazy Show. We love the song Boom Boom Ain't It Great to Be Crazy. So when we went and started singing the song, when we thought of a radio show, it sounded perfect. Cool. Brainy. Okay. Sweet. Now, do you want to hear what happened on April Fool's Day?
What?
Well, first of all, as you know, well, maybe you don't know this, Bronwyn and me, when we found out about April Fool's Day, we started playing on the phone, and we played the moniker into the phone when Daddy was talking to someone from the library. Daddy came running out. We had the portable, by the way. Daddy came running out, grabbed it, and ran back in, yelling at us. And in his socks, too. Quite barbaric, I say. But then he thought it was kind of quite barbaric that we played the moniker into the phone.
Well, 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 what have we here on this crazy show? What do we have? Two kids, one pretending to be a dog and one holding the leash. Hey, you two! Hello! Let's see, what are you guys doing?
Bronwyn's my dog, and I tie her to a tree.
I see.
And now I'm going to go shopping.
What do you plan to buy?
I plan to buy a lot, because I'm going to order a house. I'm going to buy a dog house, some poisonous dog food, and what else? I remember a baking book.
And what have we here? You are tying your shoelace, eh? And what is the amazing story behind this shoelace?
Once upon a time, there was a shoelace. He met another shoelace because there was no such thing as two shoelaces together because everyone used to loop, 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 loop up their shoes. And then the extraordinary thing happened. Together, the tailor found out. And then that's the end of everything. Bye.
What about that amazing smile and those amazing eyes? Oh.
They I'll say brush my hair and brush my smile.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Give me the best smile you can give me. Give me the best smile you have ever made. Yes, that's it. Yes, that's it. Yes.
Hey, interview the car.
Okay, I'll interview this car now. I will now proceed to interviewing this beautiful car. Oh, car, how is it that you became such a glossy color of red? How is it that you had the black there? How is it that you have seats? How is it that you work? Darn car doesn't listen! I hate cars!
Boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy?
The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.